Ja. Got her.
Is that going to show up?
Okay, we're going to go ahead and get started with the cow herd adaptability and efficiency subcommittee meeting. As you might expect, we'll have people walking in and out and going to different meetings and different talks that they might want to hear. So we're just going to go ahead and move ahead, though. And so, again, just to reiterate, there's a lot of people to thank. We want to thank NCBA for all their contribution and allowing us to use Renee Lloyd and Jill Lucero and Thad. We appreciate all their help in the registrations and organization of this as well. The other thing I wanted to say before we get going on the feed efficiency and the adaptability, Denny's going to summarize. We asked him to chair a committee to put together some guidelines for collection of feed intake data because there are none. So we're talking like how we adjust weaning weight, what the calves' ages have to be used in an evaluation, yearling weight, how we use ultrasound, how we use frame score. Same type of thing, because there's a lot of interest in what we can do to improve our profitability from an efficiency standpoint and a feed intake standpoint. And Denny is chairing that committee, and I'll let him talk a little bit about who all is on that committee. And we're looking for guidelines to be improved here in the next year. And when we decide to go to print with the next set of BIF guidelines, they'll be in that. They'll also be on the website once approved, and that's kind of what we've charged Denny with. Now, this first talk should be very interactive. We don't have all the answers. I don't think, Denny, you guys haven't decided on all the answers or all the guidelines, but we want to hear your concerns because we'd like to hear what you think, what your worries are as far as data collection, and give us some feedback and help us as bring up things that we should consider. So at this point, I'm going to turn it over to Dr. Denny Cruz, a good friend of BIF and somebody who's really passionate about efficiency in the feedlot and on the cow herd side. So, Denny?
Thank you, Mark. Can everybody hear me pretty well in the back, too? Thank you again, Mark, and to BIF. As Mark pointed out, I'm going to go through a few slides that I've prepared, and really the content of these slides is going to be what do we think, what do we know? What can we prove? What don't we know? What do we think we know but probably don't as well as we should? And really just bring you folks up to date on the very preliminary meetings that this BIF Intake Guidelines Committee has talked about so far. Now, I'm really relieved because Dave Nichols just walked in the back of the room, and he is one of the most reliable people in the world. Everybody here knows Dave and how long that he has been with BIF, which celebrates its 40th anniversary this year. And it was formed within just a month or two of my actual birth date. So Dave is never afraid to stand up and say, Cruz, you're an idiot. And I'm looking for that. Okay. In terms of let's back up. The committee, I've outlined the members that we have identified as core researchers, extension personnel, AI sector representatives, breed association representatives, as well as producers who have shown an interest and have a track record in the collection of standardized intake guidelines in support of furthered research understanding the biology of intake and efficiency, as well as understanding the implications or the roadmap that we might formulate in ramping up a national program at population level. Okay? So when Mark graciously invited me to head up this group and put together this committee, I thought one of the reasonable places to start in terms of an introduction is just to outline really what is BIF looking for from this group in terms of guidelines and sort of the background and the discussions around those guidelines that need to take place. So just as a quick review, our goal is to review the scientific literature in my mind, at least as it exists today, with regard to intake data collection. A, add our own recent findings from the research community, discuss all of these, and make recommendations for a standard BIF-style guidelines chapter for the collection of individual feed intake data, and also to extend that to the concept of reporting measures of efficiency of feed utilization. Now, some of the subtopics that I think that are extremely pertinent to this include our main motivation, which is to make sure that data that conform to our sort of gold standard guidelines will be ultimately acceptable for national cattle evaluation programs, which will involve ensuring uniformity of the databases that will be collected by the various producer groups and breed associations at a population level. We would like to be able to have some uniformity in this data to enable meta-analysis. Meta-analysis is a scientific term that means once everybody publishes their papers and we learn something new, we go back and collect and we reanalyze all the data again to see what new information we can utilize out of it. And that's very important considering the bottleneck that we have all recognized in terms of the availability of intake data collected in a uniform manner across different animal types. We think we ought to be concerned with defining a standard terminology. Efficiency is a term that's extremely nebulous and leads to a lot of incorrect conclusions and a lot of confusion simply because efficiency can mean a lot of things, and we will get into that as we go through. Of course, maintain the chapter will be one of our goals and outline what we think might be a uniform approach to describing this group of traits or our concept we call efficiency of feed utilization. So, what do we know? What, in terms of this lit review, are the points that we want to hit? Well, mostly there is very little consistency among more than two dozen measures of so-called efficiency that have been reported over the last 50 or 60 years. And although it is traditional and most common, the ratio trait feed conversion or gross efficiency doesn't lend well to selection or genetic improvement because of a lot of reasons. It suffers under genetic antagonisms, and I think that's a valid point to make in this cow herd group today, because feed conversion is a very good descriptor in feedlot cattle that are in a growing phase, but it's not very repeatable or very informative in other segments of the industry where the ratio of intake to gain is not particularly descriptive or relevant. So we need a desirable measure of efficiency, and we realize that the most optimal of those are based on actual intake. And it is very cognizant to this committee that we will be making distinctions between actual intake or measured intake and so-called predicted intake from some sort of modeling approach. We'll go through some of the reasons for that as we go along. Current thinking among most of the research community is that we stop thinking about efficiency in terms of one phenotype, one trait. We think of efficiency as rather a methodology, and those of you who are able to stay around for what I'm going to talk about later on in terms of cow efficiency specifically, you'll see a little bit more about what I mean. And we take this approach scientifically and from an application point of view because for genetic, biological, and statistical reasons, an approach seems to work better than defining one trait. Sorting out intake is still the key issue, and I think that was the primary motivation for this committee, was to sort out uniform ways of collecting data. Which brings us to the major point. What are the logistics of sourcing data? This is an expensive phenotype to measure, and there's not a lot of facilities in North America that have been retrofit, although that effort is growing. What are the populations that we can currently target that are likely to exist or that we need to really recruit in terms of getting facilities established to collect intake data? Will they be experimental? The answer is yes, because they do exist. Will that data come from field settings? The answer is yes, we hope so, because there are a number of bull test stations and so forth that are being retrofit with equipment that is suitable. Central bull tests from the field or the commercial setting is probably going to be the primary source of data generation, at least in the short and the medium term. And we will continue to rely on those experimental progeny tests. The reason that we want to keep our options open across these things and in terms of facilities is because we've got the need scientifically, biologically, to measure across a wide range of animal types, genders, ages, production sector, and other considerations that the committee has outlined. Refining and defining test criteria is going to be a familiar part, I think, of this exercise for those of you that have read the 8th edition of the BIF guidelines. One of the first of which is the length of test. We are discussing this issue of length of test in a lot of different contexts. First of all, we want to make sure we're testing animals long enough to get a stable capture of actual phenotypic expression of feed intake. But we also want to maximize the use of our facilities in light of normal beef production cycles. So we want to maximize the use of our facilities, get the most amount of data that we can, but we also want to make sure that we're doing a proper test. Okay? Publications from both Australia and North America would suggest that for actual individual feed intake data collection, you need somewhere between 35 and 45 solid days of data collection to make that meaningful. They don't necessarily have to be consecutive days, and there are some other issues that the committee still needs to sort out. For average daily gain, most of the research would suggest that the error structure of that data collection minimizes at about 70 days with either biweekly or monthly measurements of live weight. Which leads us to the question of, okay, we can measure intake. What other phenotypes should we logically include in a guidelines recommendation? Intake, yes, but supporting data as well to accommodate the concept of efficiency and to accommodate data collection that will allow us to ask the important questions about potentials for antagonism and the effects or implications of selection. And here again, we remind you of the point that we need to distinguish between actual measurements and predictions of intake. Diet is always an issue of concern and an issue of conversation when you start talking about this. And the real consideration there is, what kind of data do we need to collect? What do we need to know about the diet? Diets differ greatly across the various regions of North America, regardless of whether you're talking about feedlot steers, bull tests, or cow herds. We need to know that information. We're still sorting through with our nutritional expertise on the committee to what level of specificity do we need to have that information. Do we need to have just an ingredient composition of the diet that's being fed on test? Do we need to have a chemical analysis of the diet? Is approximate analysis good enough? And issues such as that. As fed and dry matter basis is a point that we will consider. And those two issues under diet will be tied together. If we want to compare studies across various regions or across continents, we need to think about the dry matter density of diets that are commonly used. And in the scientific literature, it has become somewhat standard to report on a dry matter basis. Hardware and software. There is a lot of emerging technology out there for the measurement of individual feed intake in a group-fed setting. We like that. We like the minds that have centered around that effort, and we want to see that continue. Right now, we're probably not going to make any recommendations on restricting collection of intake data to one specific hardware vendor or to one specific hardware setup. beyond the fact that we're going to say that individually housed animals are not producing individual feed intake data that approximates the system that we're actually operating in. We want to see those cattle group fed. Okay, I want to go quickly through here because this is kind of some back-end issues that the committee will deal with in terms of maintaining a database that is focused on recording intake, but also expand that to make sure that we can accommodate the most reasonable and logical biological measures of efficiency. And that will involve defining a minimum criteria, and we're going to rely heavily on our research and our breed association partners to define what they want to see in their database. And we're going to say that that is going to be guided by this umbrella term, that it should be complete enough to do genetic evaluation, although that doesn't mean that we're going to be imposing pedigree minimums or other things that all bull tests might not be able to accommodate. Other considerations that the committee has discussed thus far are there are some resources out there on the web from previous efforts resulting from scientific endeavors along these lines that we might be able to use as a starting point or as a guide. The Australian resources associated with the Beef CRC in and around Armidale and their commercial breed plan documents will be used as a starting point, and we will likely be making amendments and so forth. But they have nice frameworks in them. We also have some resources we can gather on here in North America. Alberta has standards that we use for both research and bull test stations where I work in Texas. Gordy is working with several groups, both in research and in commercial settings, and we are sure that there are others out there that we welcome input from. And other considerations, the last topic is the possibility of making suggestions in terms of markers as predictors of intake and perhaps efficiency. I put these into two sort of general categories, the first of which is genetic, where we've got an extremely large volume of SNP and SNP panel products being commercially marketed. They still, in large part, need to be validated, but we certainly want to be cognizant and aware that they are out there and what they might provide to us in terms of help and prediction. But we've also got a lot of research going on in the area of physiological markers, plasma tests for IGF-1, for leptin, other hormones, other systems. We want to be aware of that research as well as we move forward. So with that, I want to generate some discussion, and I will be more than happy to, and I really want to, share your input and your comments and your suggestions with the committee after we're done here today. So with that, Mark, do you want to moderate the floor discussion?
Yeah, happy to take any questions, comments for Denny. I'll walk over to you if you raise your hand, and you can vocalize those today.
Good. Excellent.
Denny, this is really a question, not an attempt to answer your wisecrack remark about how old I am.
No. It was really a wisecrack remark about how old I am.
If you really, really want to measure metabolic efficiency and get phenotypic data on intake, why wouldn't it be better literally to lock these cattle in expansion where they would, there wouldn't be the social interactions and the exercise and these kind of things initially for a research standpoint to get heritability and so on?
You know, there's. I'm going to take two approaches to sort of halfway answer your question, Dave. I think one of the ultimate motivations of the industry is to approximate real industry conditions, and that is why we have moved, and the technology has developed to the point where we are measuring intake in a scenario that is as much like an actual feedlot as we can make it. There are behavioral reasons that we do that, and there are actual mean and variance reasons that we do that. The individually housed or stanchioned approach can be useful to answer biological questions, and it has been used in that way. But we need to know, I think, intake when animals are free to socialize, free to express dominance issues, free to express normal behavioral patterns, and not have depressed intake simply because they're isolated. Does that sound reasonable?
Four questions to Dennis.
Okay, that's good input. The only feedback that I can give you right now is that the measurement error, which is what you're talking about, when you talk about shrunk weights and those procedures, you're talking about removing noise error due to gut fill and water fill and those kinds of things. We are cognizant of that in the research community, and the approach, at least in the research setting, has been to take serial weights on these test facilities, keeping in mind that most of that is not motivated by a large-scale commercial sector where biweekly or monthly weights are not really necessarily feasible on a large scale. There's some research where weights were taken weekly. There's some where it's biweekly. There's a big portion of it where it's taken monthly. And it's trying to get at the very issue that you bring up of minimizing measurement error and getting a good capture on growth rate. I don't know of any research that would really support that.
That's true, David. There's a lot of evidence for dressing perception.
Yeah, all of these weight. Now, yeah, okay, I should clarify. The procedures that I'm describing would be on an individual animal basis. And dressing percent, to calculate dressing percent, you have to have a live weight measurement. So all of those procedures that I've been describing are try to minimize error in that live weight measurement. Yeah, and that probably works really well on the average, but not very well for individuals. Anything else?
Sorry, Norman.
I'd just like to make a couple comments. I've worked at a lot of research centers throughout my lifetime, and we've mainly worked with bulls to get efficiency of gain. And we fed in individual pens and weighed back the feed every week and all that stuff. And up at Saratoga, they had the boxes we had to break the bulls to go into, and that was a lot of work. And we collected this data, and it's just where the animals are by themselves, they don't do very good. They need to be together, but they don't gain their potential. You can have them in groups of 10 and get pretty good information, but you don't know what individual bulls which. And the thing that I've noticed over the years, we did this, we reported this information, but when the bull buyers came to buy the bulls, they didn't pay extra money for efficiency of gain. That's what I saw. And I don't know if they're ready for it today or not, but it wasn't worth the work. And I believe that we need to do this. And I'd like to point out one other thing. Dr. Keith Gregory, many of you know him at Clay Center, Nebraska, he reported the data on composites and crossbred calves. And I can still see that data. And one thing he reported for the crossbred cattle, they were 0.5% body condition higher than the other cattle. Well, to me, collecting body condition over all the years with cows, calves, everything else, a half a body condition meant a bunch to me. And so that's what crossbreeding and composites can do for you, is increase body condition score. So I think body condition score is something we can use to measure efficiency. I work heifers every spring, and there's a variation in these heifers by body condition. My family put on weight a little easier. Some others don't, but I think they have to be within a breed. Simmentals will breed and reproduce as well as the Angus do with a lower body condition. So I think you got to work within the breeds. But I just wanted to point this out to you.
Thanks. Yeah, the comments you make about body condition are very relevant, especially when we start talking about cow herd efficiency, and I'll make some comments about that later.
What the costs would be associated with, because I'm guessing you're talking about when you're doing the grouping, it's going to be some sort of electronic system like the swineys, or I don't know what type of system, but.
Yeah. And I've been purposefully vague about that. There are hardware options. There's still a lot of Kalen gate systems out there, which is a linear bunk system that has a passive electronic access mechanism tied to some kind of an indicator around the animal's neck that basically disallows them from eating anywhere but one location in the bunk. And there's a lot of that kind of facility out there. I know Gordy's got some of that in Texas, and that for a long time was considered pretty cutting edge. The newer electronic approaches, there's really two systems that are in North America to any reasonable extent. They use various permutations of pairing radio frequency ID with load cells mounted under individual bunks and computer software and RFI technology in the back end to pair animal attendance with feed disappearance. So those are the standard technologies, I think, that are available. Who knows? More may emerge. What was the other part of your question? Cost. Of course, that depends on which technology you're using. It is still a matter of scale. Sometimes it is possible to amortize the cost of a system over a longer period of time and increase its use. Our estimates 2 or 3 years ago were somewhere in the neighborhood of $150 to $175 a head over a standard 112-day test. And we thought that reflected not only the cost of the equipment, but also the added labor associated with maintaining that equipment. Those estimates are probably wrong now, but
Over 5 years?
Amortized over 5 years, which was, according to our hardware and software suppliers, pretty close to the functional lifespan, either due to equipment deterioration or advancements in the technology that required upgrade and replacement.
Think those costs are down or up?
I think they're down. I think they're lower than that. The labor one is the one that's hard to capture, because you can't just cost intake on what it takes to stand a particular piece of equipment in front of a bull test bunk. You've got to consider the extra labor and management that's involved in maintaining and using that equipment at the same time. Just yell at me, Lee.
And is there any disadvantage to the Kalen gates where they can only graze it or eat in one place? Has there been any research comparing the two systems to look at the efficacy of each?
I know that on a global scale, Lee, that when we compare averages and intakes of similar types of cattle fed on Kalen gates versus on some of the newer technologies like GrowSafe, that we get the same kind of central tendency statistics. You pointed out the obvious place to look for a discrepancy, and that is the Kalen gate forces animals to eat at one spot all the time. And the data from the systems that do not restrict location of feeding would suggest that animals do not perfectly return to the same place in the bunk every time they feed naturally unless they're restricted to do so. But it's not affecting, that I know of, any study definitively has said that we're screwing up intake numbers by forcing them to eat at one spot. Chip? That's a big question, and I'm glad you brought that up. The potential for diet by genotype interaction is a big consideration in this. I'll talk more about that this afternoon a little later when we get into the cow side. But yes, there is some evidence, both from North America and from Australia, that intake and efficiency is not the same across different animal genders and types and diets. The obvious implication and the red flag that goes off in your head is that we're trying to predict most likely profitability differences due to intake in feeder cattle when most of our data is probably going to come from bulls and those are eating different diets. So we need to work out the genetic correlation and the associations between measures of intake and efficiency on bulls measured on test and how that translates to measures in their calves. And I keep thinking back, this is classically analogous to the ultrasound and carcass trait issue where we're measuring carcass traits in live bulls and replacement heifers, but we're actually capturing dollars on calves in a grid. So I think the technology is there, the expertise is there to evaluate those correlations. We know how to model it, we know how to take care of it, but we need the populations to do it. And that's been a big hurdle, and we've really had some conversations about how best to test bulls and recapture their calves, their progeny a year later, and get them back in the feedlot and measure actual intake using this equipment on both animal types. Joe?
I was just going to add a comment about Mr. Leeson's question. The Kalen gates do restrict them to eat at one position, but they can also all eat at one time. With the electronic bunks, I believe the stocking rate with one system it weighs about 8 head per bunk or something like that. So, only 1/8 of the animals will be able to eat at any given time. And neither one of those actually approximates what happens in the feedlot, where I think it's, 1 foot above space per head or something like that. So both systems have their strengths and weaknesses, but neither one really approximates what happens in the feedlot.
Danny, I just wanted to follow up on another piece of Chip's question that I'm not sure you heard it, and it's an interesting question, and that is, are there some latitude differences, geographic latitude differences in terms of this, and can you build that in? In other words, if you're going to look at, if you're going to work with Gordy in Texas and you're going to work in Lethbridge, are we going to see some environmental interactions?
Switch them and feed them? Kind of research. It's a possibility, and that's all I can say about that right now. It's a possibility. We could certainly do it. Has it been done? Probably not. Not on a scale that would be useful. Have I monopolized?
Did they see another one of these remote control ones over there? I couldn't find it.
This would be along the same lines as the gentleman over here talked about adding a value to this product after you've had it. Dr. Bridge, if we had an EPD for this value, do you think there would be some added value? And also, how far are we from getting an EPD for it?
The methodology for an EPD is very straightforward for a trait like this. And there actually have been some, both within breed and multi-breed EPDs published on several populations in North America that include breeding values or EPDs on residual feed intake, feed conversion ratio. So that approach is not new to us, and we can turn those numbers around very quickly. I think it is important to make that step and to give a piece of information back to the bull buyers as well as the bull consigners, because EPD has become the common currency of genetic improvement across the industry. And so I think as a powerful and universally agreed upon selection tool, that will be the objective of all of our research, will be to get that to a breeding value level.
Denny, I have a question if you're ready.
Bullseye.
We have a Kalen Gate system where we work, and the one beauty part of a Kalen Gate system is that as we put feed in front of those animals, we can measure what we put in front, but we can also measure what they leave behind as far as the nutrient density is concerned. When we go to a group-fed system, now we've taken out an ability to understand how those animals sort through feed. And so the first one at a bunk, after a refill, could have a different nutrient intake of the concentration of its diet than the last one that comes to that bunk. And I don't know how to word the question, it's more of a fact, but that is one factor that would need to be considered in a group-fed situation. Both systems have great advantages and great disadvantages, and the one that Kalen gave is a tremendous amount of work. And if you've got dumb animals, it is doubly a tremendous amount of work to get them to learn where they're supposed to go.
I was quote-unquote unlucky enough to have 140 3/8 Brahman calves on Kalen Gates during my master's thesis, so I know a little bit about the work you're talking about there. Diet selection is a possibility of an issue. It's not completely solved by either system because of spillage and other issues that can come in there. I do know that everybody that I know of that's got GrowSafe as an example are doing cereal composition of orts and looking at that issue. Now, my good friends down the hall, like Karen Boschman and those folks that are nutritionists, and Gordy as well, who quite frankly know a heck of a lot more about genetics than I'll ever know about nutrition, will tell you that there are ways to approach that.
Danny, I'd like you to comment on the real value of RFI is not in the feedlot or in the bull test or anything, but it's really the metabolic efficiency of the cowherd, because half of the cost of a beefsteak is simply feed required for the maintenance of 1.9 mamas.
Yeah, that's a good point. The talk that I'm going to give after my colleague that's going next will focus specifically on that issue of how do we define efficiency? Is RFI the best way to define efficiency? And I think all I'm ready to commit to now is that RFI, I tend to think less about it, or tend to think about it less as a trait and more as an approach or a concept or a methodology. So whether I would ultimately recommend RFI or something like it to measure efficiency in a cow will depend on how well we can describe the genetic architecture of that phenotype in cows, and we just don't have the research yet.
Denny, I got a question. Okay. I know there's several groups in here, research centers that are contemplating putting in some of these devices, and there's some other groups that are already doing progeny tests and probably aren't going to wait for guidelines and to come out before they start those. What are some two or three key points that if you think, looking down in the future, they need to adhere to make that data utilizable, but they're collecting before we ever get guidelines?
In the absence of guidelines specifically for intake, I would suggest you contact the experts in your breed associations and your producer groups that have experience with bull tests and other organized ways of conducting these kind of, make use of the expertise that's in your area. or that you can contact. Specific recommendations, it seems to me that intake measurement comes down to a very few things. Within one test, you need proper contemporary grouping strategy. You need to make sure that those animals are within probably a 90-day age window when they start the test. You need to make sure that you collect intake for at least 40 days to make sure that you get a good capture on average dry matter intake on those cattle, and make sure that you get 70 days of serial weight collection so that you can have a good estimate of growth rate. Those are probably the key. If you get really ambitious, I would also recommend 2 or 3 ultrasound measurements, beginning, middle, and end at the optimum, to capture some information on body composition changes, because we do know that that accounts for a reasonable portion of the variance in intake. It's identifiable, and that methodology is mature. I think I've monopolized too much of your program already.
One more for Danny. Anybody else?
Yeah, the 40 days, that's a good point, Joe. The 40 days is post-acclimation to a diet, to a facility, to the weather, to being weaned or whatever. most of the research now would agree that 21 days of an acclimation period is sufficient.